Fargo, the new virtual assistant from Wells Fargo, makes banking faster and easier. Like this.
Fargo, what's my checking account routing number?
And this.
Fargo, turn off my debit card.
And this.
Fargo, what did I spend on groceries last month?
And that's just the beginning. Do you Fargo? You can. In the Wells Fargo mobile app. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/getFargo.
Terms and conditions apply. Your mobile carrier's availability and message and data rates may apply. Wells Fargo Bank N.A. member FDIC.
When we made our McDonald's Spicy Chicken McNuggets, you were praise hands emoji. Then we ran out, and you were streaming tears emoji. Now they're back, so you can be grinning face with sweat emoji. Order ahead on the McDonald's app.
And get money mouth face emoji with two orders of crispy, irresistible 10-piece McNuggets, spicy or classic, for just $6. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Single item at regular price. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis. I'm here in the beautiful RCR Studios. They are the presenting sponsor of the Atlanta Podcast. Randall and Ray and their team help you and your business make awesome, compelling content. The most expensive freaking cameras I've ever seen. And you know, that's not obviously, that's just half of it. The rest is dudes who care about you and your content and want to make awesome shit. So you want to make awesome stuff, talk to Randall. Talk to Ray, RCR Video. Today's program, Shaw. That's right, S-H-A-A, S-H-A-H, Shaw, whom I had reached out to via IG because I'd seen this guy on my channel. And then it turned out I saw him at the Super Bowl. Remember, I was down at the Super Bowl and was getting you guys a bunch of interviews. And I've, by the way, I still have more. Like, that's initially what this was going to be, was my third episode of a bunch of short interviews. But it turns out on that third day, I got several long interviews that you're going to be hearing as the weeks go on. So look forward to those. We are now experiencing one of those weeks of winter. It's freezing cold today. Let's hope it goes away soon. Spring is right around the corner. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I don't know why I'm talking about the weather. I just seem to do that sometimes with these shows. Anyway, enjoy Shaw. Away we go.
Check, check, check. Shaw on the mic.
Take your, say us your name.
This is Shaw from Toronto. We're here in Atlanta, Super Bowl weekend, Radio Row. What's going on?
So when you first started speaking with me over there, I only know your singing voice.
Right.
So it was kind of like a... like the first time you see an actor, and then like, oh, that dude's English. I'll be honest, it like tripped me out.
Yo, that I...
If I met you in the street,
right?
Just at Starbucks, and nobody around you had clothing on that said your name on it.
Right.
I would just be like, oh, this is James, the businessman, or the whatever.
Oh, I'm definitely got the business look on right now. So that is also confusing. But the voice, I've definitely thought about that before. Like, there's times where I see my own music video. So yeah, you're right. It needs the visual to really spark it. I'm like, huh, this doesn't look like the guy who's making the music myself. So I know what you're talking about.
But you just like, hi, Matt.
I think I have a deeper voice. And for years, this is actually real. For years, my team has tried to pull out the ability for me to rap with this speaking voice. And for whatever reason, it's just not how it comes out until about 2 weeks ago. This is like for years and years. It's like that deep voice, like, Shaw, just get that out. And it's like, I don't know what to do. So I gave up on it until 2 weeks ago. I was in the booth and Levin, my main producer, suggested doing something. Oh yeah, he my whole life going to school, I've always been too loud. Use your indoor voice. You're too loud. Everyone, girls, school, everyone. I never knew what indoor voice meant until this moment 2 weeks ago, where Levin, he had to physically tell me what to do, to do it. And I started speaking quieter, but then I was able to rap. in this voice. And I'm like, this is what indoor voice is. And it was a game changer. So now it's real exciting for music because now we have this whole wave of being able to rap like this. So, but I know what you're talking about.
So where did you grow up?
Born and raised in Toronto. I'm a Canadian boy.
Yeah. And are there a lot of people that look like you in Toronto?
No, I think that my look is pretty unique. There's not a lot of brown guys with long hair. And then I don't think there's a lot of long-haired guys like this with beards, other than maybe Jesus. So there's not a lot. My look definitely is a unique one.
Where are your parents from?
Both my parents are from India.
Okay. And when did they come here?
My dad got to New York in the 70s. So my dad sort of had like a bit of the classic immigrant hustle story of like, all right, let's get from India to wherever will take me. And he got to, I think at the time it was East Germany. And then there was some East German guy who ended up being his like guardian angel that helped him get over to America. But my dad was, my dad's sort of like a revolutionary. Like he's like a revolutionary. His background, what he studied was psychology, social work, that sort of thing. But in New York, he was just doing like labor. He was doing like hard labor, living in Harlem. Then he finally got a job offer in like middle of nowhere Canada, like some middle of nowhere Flin Flon Manitoba type place. Like, some words you don't even think is a real place.
Right.
And then from there, he got to Toronto. And then he brought my mom over then to Toronto. So my mom had a bit of an easier road. And she came there, I think, in the 80s.
Yeah.
So that's the family history. That's the family story.
Right.
In Atlanta, I think that there's... Well, I was going to say in Atlanta, I think I have some racial ambiguity. In a lot of places that don't have a lot of brown people, they won't know what I am. But one dope thing about Atlanta is I think that people just don't care that much. Whatever I am, it doesn't even matter to people that much, which has been... a big, nice little bonus.
Would it be fair to say that in the last 15 years, brown people might have had a harder time than black people in terms of the instant judgment, eyeballs at the airport kind of thing?
Airport, absolutely. Airport, you're 100%
you got brown
correct.
Skin and that beard, and it's...
And the beard. Oh, yeah. Right. No, you're that's very well said. And actually, not a lot of people, not a lot of non-brown people, like, understand that. And, yeah, so... Definitely in the airport or like maybe like applying for certain jobs, being a brown person, like it might be the hardest race. I think that there's still like, you know, in the streets, maybe driving with police, like.
Right.
There still is like, it's still, you know. And then in the industry being brown, it's rough. Or the hard part about being brown in the industry is that no one in the industry is brown. But then also rap is not the... main music for brown people, so you don't have that like built-in community support.
Right, but there has been, because I am not, listen, I'm not Mr. like
yeah.
hip-hop guy yep. or music guy or whatever,
uh-huh.
But I do know that, I don't know how many years ago, but when the public first started hearing sort of Indian beats
yep.
find their way
yep.
and it was like, oh, this is natural.
The
right?
You, like sampling Indian music is this, works so well.
Right, that standard.
It works so
if
I, well.
If you go to Planet Bombay in Little Five Points, one of my favorite places to eat, I had an office right above it, and they have those movies on that the same yep. guy is in,
yep.
and you like hear that music, when you figure out a way to
sample
to
it,
drop that,
yep.
you're like, oh, it's natural.
So natural.
But yet there aren't any, or aren't a lot of, like you don't, there is no one in the charts right now. Basically,
there's no one in the chart. There's one brown boy from Toronto, Nav, who's doing his thing. Big up Nav. And then the one part of the brown community that does support each other in sort of entertainment is the Punjabi community. So there are artists that not chart like Billboard charts, but that do succeed that make Punjabi music. So it's just for that community, but they support each other so much that they're able to do it. But yeah, basically, effectively, there's no one on the, you know, that like A-plus level at this moment, which is the lane that, I mean, this is the path that I'm on, which is exciting, but, you know, you need, I'm needing to sort of take a machete and cut my way through this forest. So, you know, it's work.
So what was 13-year-old Shah listening to, wanting to be about, 15-year-old?
Yeah, let's go back. So 13-year-old, 15-year-old Shah was listening to whatever New York rap was hot. So it was New York rap that was coming up to Toronto. That's what we listened to. So, like, I think the earliest I can remember, I think, is, like, Wu-Tang. I think, like, I remember Tupac and Biggie, like, dying, but it's, like, you know, like, an earlier memory type thing. But I definitely listened to Pac. I listened to some political rap, like Immortal Technique and Dead Prez. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That really struck me. That was like during George Bush days, as something that's more than just entertainment, because it was like educating people. And especially in a world where like people watch Fox News and believe this.
Please
you
don't
know,
get me started.
Right? So then it's like, this is a service. This is a service. So that's what I was listening to, sort of, that's what influenced me. Yeah, Tupac and that sort of political rap and the New York rap. A little bit of, like, Nirvana, but then not too much more rock other than that. And that was after Kurt Cobain died. But, yeah, so Tupac, political rap, New York rap.
And how'd you make it down here?
So I made it down here. So I'm a Toronto born and raised rapper. New York has sort of become a home to me, so I still have my place in New York. And I think I was in LA at the time. Some opportunities started arising in, like, you know, like little acting type things, doing these shows here and there. And I got really heavily involved in the art community, in the street art community in LA. I was in Atlanta for a show. It was just supposed to be one night about 2 years ago. And then, but when we landed, there was something here. It's like, so I was with a team of three people, my cinematographer, my engineer, and Liz, my video producer.
Liz Cleveland
in the house.
Give her a little shout
out. What up?
She's moving coffee cups so that the shot looks better. I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go. Hey, she's doing it. So, but then we got here, and then the whole team was like, yo, there's something here. Like, the fan base here was, one, bigger than we realized. Like, we didn't know that there was this many fans in Atlanta, but also, like, what Atlanta does is it really supports an artist's wave if it's good. A lot of other places, like, you'll see this meme rolling around all the time, which is totally accurate. People value popularity over talent these days. But Atlanta values the talent.
You got to bring it.
You got to bring it. But if you have it, then you'll get it, which a lot of cities, the people just won't do that. And in Atlanta, they will. So then it was like, there's something here. So the day turned into a week, turned into a month. And it's like, I how could it make sense to not stay here? And then just kept staying here. So then I started getting love from like key figures in Atlanta. So Magic City was like the first door that opened. So it was like, damn, you know Magic City's like playing Sha? You know when you walk into Magic City, they'll... Shaw walks into the place and they start shouting him out. And then when people would be like, this is happening for you? I'm like, yeah, I guess. So like, you know how hard a rapper has to work for that to happen? And it's like, oh, okay. And then that led to Bodega Teezy, Swamp Izzo, who's on B103. And then it was like, this has just got to be the place where we stay.
So you're in, I would say, what I would call still the first generation of you can break through, like, on Hustle, right? Once upon a time, MTV didn't love you, radio didn't love you, forget it, right? Yeah. There was no YouTube to produce your own content, Instagram to produce your own content,
yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I feel like, you know, I found you through IG.
Right.
And that was not possible maybe even 5 years ago. I mean, of course, there was always, like, a random, you know, but they were mostly non-talent people, like, Tila Tequila came through MySpace or whatever.
Exactly.
But you know what I'm saying? So I want you to talk about that sort of grind and what that's like, because you still haven't been anointed by Quincy Jones.
Right. And, well, so the way that you said it is very positive, and I actually like that. So from the artist perspective, the era has definitely changed from the kind of gatekeeper days, which
right.
means you need...
That's the word I was looking for.
You need someone who has the ability to open something up, open up a platform, open up whatever it is, and then the attention sort of automatically comes to you. And then when someone really pushes the button in an organized way, you know, the cards are stacked in your favor. There's examples of people who had all the chances, like, you know, Jay-Z's homie, Memphis Bleek, had all the chances that just didn't happen. But in general, that was a game... Whereas, and then over time, you know, YouTube, and then, you know, YouTube was really probably the first one. And now Instagram has sort of replaced TV, meaning that Instagram is just where people sort of scroll instead of channel surf, right? But what that's done, what that and the ability to make music very easily compared to in the past, for a producer just gets on your computer, just make it happen. What it's done is that the barrier to entry is nothing. Anyone can rap. Anyone can do it. So then what that does is that there's so much competition, but then there's also so much, you know, like poor music that it devalues music overall. So then what artists will then complain about is that how hard you have to work just to make any noise. But what you said, which actually I hadn't even thought of it from that perspective, is that you can do it strictly on hustle, meaning you don't need a single favor. And that is true. Like, Russ is a rapper from Atlanta who I don't think really got any love from the gatekeepers, or I think the Atlanta, like the classic, the trap, like the strip club world that, you know, has got me going. But then he just figured it out. Internet pounded. Now he's doing it. So what you just said is a very positive way of viewing it. And that's actually the way the independent artist should view it, is that you find your grind, you find what it is that works for you, and you just go in on it. And now, I remember like when we realized, like, all right, you know what, we're better off doing this on our own than like signing like an entry level deal. And then we realized, but yo, this is a lot of work. It's like, you got to have your, now I quit Twitter, but like, it was like, you have your Twitter, SoundCloud, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, this. So it's like, that's a lot of work. Now what I realized is you only need to be popping on one. You find your community on one, and then they become your first fan base, then it will move.
Right.
So I really like what you just said, and it's accurate.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank God you talked to me. And I would say, so I'm in a similar position, right? I'm a content creator.
Yep.
I do this. I do some other stuff we can talk about later. But the point is that I don't put a lot in those other things, but what I try to do is just post there at least once in a while.
Yep.
And point back to the main thing.
Yep.
If your main thing is YouTube, point them there. If your main thing is your iTunes feed, point them there. And then that way you're just kind of like, you never know. You're going to find one, two, three people. But yes, I believe like
focus
if you're
on the main thing.
Well, whatever you, again, some people are lousy with IG, so they don't point people there. They only point people to their feed.
I think that might even be better, yeah.
You never know. Whatever works for you.
Whatever
or
works.
Like some people are all in on Snap, whatever. So yeah, I think you're wise to like go all in on something. And then, yeah, and then crush it. And then have whoever helps you, like, okay, we're going to throw, I have a page, we'll throw some love to it once in a while and just keep sort of feeding the monster. But speaking of which, how conscious is that for you, like you and your team? Are you like, all right, we got to make sure, do you kind of wing it? Or are you like, okay, we're going to post twice on IG today or three times a week? Or do you just kind of?
For Instagram specifically, so Instagram is where we've ended up finding the, like Instagram, I guess, is the platform that got hot. I guess my music videos did very well. That was actually one of the things that got Atlanta behind me, because they saw the music videos. They're like, oh, this guy must be signed, whatever. But then,
because you made a quality video.
Because they're quality videos in an era where, you know, videos don't carry the same value. But for you to pop on YouTube. So one of the keys of, you know, this era of succeeding right now is consistency. Music videos, the way that we do it, takes a lot. So, meaning we can't put them out every day. So YouTube, when we put things out, it does very well. But Instagram, we have the ability to every day post a picture, which is kind of what I try to do. Like, let's put a picture every day and then engage the fans.
Yes.
Respond to my comments, show them the love back. If someone likes 100 pictures, if someone found my page, you see the follow and then you see them, they liked, shout that person out. Reward the fans, make them feel good. Especially me, I'm still relatively early in my career. So those are the two things, consistency and engage your community. Create your community and then like make them feel good. So that's been, but a broader strategy, we're aware of it. And maybe because it's a small team and we're independent, it's like there's not enough hours in the day. Or maybe some of these platforms just don't speak to me that much. Like Twitter, it's like, Twitter is where I would be like, I would take my cheap shots. It's like, oh, Donald Trump did some stupid shit right now.
Right.
Bang. But I'm like, this is right. Not going to help me.
Right. But so for example, right, for context, all these older sports writers, all on Twitter.
Yeah.
None of them on Instagram.
Right.
And a lot of these older athletes, same thing. Like you on Instagram, they look at me like I have three heads.
True.
Where
yes.
The young athletes, I interviewed a young player.
They don't know what's up.
They're on IG all day.
Of course.
Twitter, I barely fuck with Twitter. Pardon my language. I don't know why I just said pardon my language. It's my show. I barely fuck with Twitter. I have accounts. I use them.
Yeah.
But like I said, all these old heads, they live there.
They live on
Twitter. Love the soundbite. They love the that interaction. But yeah.
And the classic, and I think journalist Twitter works for them like in that classic way.
Right.
You know what I mean? Twitter, the one thing that I, when I was using Twitter, the one thing that it's good for is engaging directly with whoever.
Right.
So you can do that on Instagram by DMing, and that's how we really connected. But on Twitter, if there's a conversation going on, say with Jerry Rice and Alvin Kamara, or whoever, or Colin Kaepernick and Travis Scott, and then you enter that conversation, you reply to it on Twitter, you see that.
Right.
And on Twitter, so engaging directly. Now, you might get ignored, but it's like so much higher, so much more likely that you'll get a response on Twitter. Now, so that's the value there. Now, I still don't do it, but right. That's what
so
Twitter
So in terms
offers.
Of engaging, like you said, are you on the DMs? Is your team here on the DMs?
So unless it's something generic, if someone is trying to book me and they want and they just need the information, then it might be like, all right, someone will be like, all right, they'll just DM them the information, or they'll say, just check the link in the bio. But anything where it's like a fan who's, you know, engaged, then I'll try to make time for it, right?
Right.
Or if nothing else, it'll be someone with the phone. Yo, Shaw, someone just said this. And I'll be like, oh, here. And then someone will just type it in, you know?
Right.
So it's my voice. It's me who's engaging my fans.
Right. So what song for you sort of like made you like I'm not aware, like I don't attend Magic City. I did once upon a time. I'm married a while. Not really my jam these days. What song did they start playing for you that sort of put you on the map, as it were?
So the first song that they played when I first hit Atlanta, the song was called Payday 71. That is a song that hits in the strip clubs. The lyrics, which is sort of my classic style, was addressing the gender wage gap. So it's like how women get paid less for the same job,
right,
but subtly, because I think in rap, when you preach and you're
right,
like, hey, this is how it should be, you know, it's kind of corny and lame. But that was the first song that Magic started playing. But the song that, and the first song that was made a wave in Atlanta, but the song that really broke me through was Just Text.
Just takes me.
There you go.
My son has been singing it because I showed him the video. Hey. Why are you laughing at me?
So that was a song.
Just text me.
Why you calling? Just text me. Why you calling? Just text me. Text, text, text. Time and money, mine expensive. Spend. You and me, we're not best friends. Let it ring, they can take. That's the song that did it for me. Atlanta,
you gotta
radio and everything.
Later, I'm going to put you on the video, and you got to do it to my son, Jackson.
Of course. Jackson, what up? You're getting the personal shout-out. Of course. We're here in Radio Row. Jackson's getting the shout-out from Super Bowl weekend.
No, I'm not.
He better save that one,
on
though.
On video, you're doing. On
yeah,
video,
of course. I know. We're doing on video. He just needs to save it. Yeah, so Just Text.
Why
are
you calling?
Why are you calling? Just text.
Just text me.
It's relatable, right?
Right.
Everyone can understand that, right? I'm calling right now.
But that's the guy who I thought I was going to meet. When you started talking to me, that's the voice I thought I was going to hear. Just digs me.
I normally am much more that. Right now, I got the blazer on.
Right.
So I'm wearing the tag. I do look a little bit more.
But then the speech too. Like you just started. Like anyway, I wasn't expecting it. So, you mentioned a couple players. Big football fan.
Yeah. So I definitely am. I actually used to work for the Saints a long time ago. I'm a Toronto boy, but I ended up in New Orleans, so I worked for the Saints, you know, as a student.
Is that a Saints Super Bowl flag? What did you do for the Saints?
So I was, at one point I still wanted to, before I realized I could make it as a rapper, I was on an academic path. So I was working under the medical team for the Saints. And this was in 2009,
because
2010.
Because you're Indian, and if you're not going to be a famous rapper, you may as well become a doctor.
Well, back then, famous rapper wasn't even, there's so few role models in entertainment for a brown guy. That it's not even that, oh, I might not make it as a rapper, so I'll go do this. It's that didn't even enter the thought. And even as someone who was like a dope rapper, it just didn't enter my head. And I can use that as an excuse, and I should have just gone for it, which I do regret going to school, like doing school and all that. But yeah, so it was like that was the path that I was on. And then it was actually after we won the Super Bowl that it's like, all right, I'm doing the dopest shit that you can do in this realm. And it was dope. It was, we won the Super Bowl, and then it was Mardi Gras. So it was like as much fun as you can possibly have. And then it was like, this still isn't for me. And I was like, all right, well, what are we going to do? And then it took a while before it was finally like, nah, let's actually do this full time, because this is one thing you can't do as a side hustle.
How long were you in New Orleans?
New Orleans, so I was there for the summer working for the team, and then...
What year was that?
This was 2009, 2010, and then I would come back for the games.
Were you an extra on the show, Treme?
That show was sad. Oh, man. It was well done, but that hurt. Oh.
Why did it hurt?
It was so sad. It was just too real. Oh. Oh, there's too much. Oh.
He's holding his heart right now, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah, that was. But no, I was not an extra on Treme. I think Treme would probably. I think that filmed after I
it's
left.
It's like 2011, 2012.
I just missed it. Right. Yeah, I just missed it.
Right.
It took place when I was there, but I think when it shot, like, you know, but I think it was shot.
Right. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to ask you the Atlanta favorites quiz. Are you ready?
Hell yeah, I'm ready.
What is your go-to order at the Waffle House?
Go to order a Waffle House. I get the blueberry. I get the blueberry waffle. I used to have a more organized order that now I don't anymore. Which was, let's see if I can remember it. Let's get the thing, because it was get my steak. So I want to order a steak, but that's going to take a few minutes for that to come. So get something, and then a pecan waffle is also going to take some time. So steak, pecan waffle. But what was the first thing? It's like, order this and it's going to come out right away. What was it?
I don't know. Well, I think they bring you the hash browns right away if you want.
Browns,
sometimes the waffle comes first. If it's a plain waffle, sometimes that'll come first.
I would always order the pecan when I had a strategy to it. But now I'll just go there and get the blueberry and some chicken. But I'm actually not at Waffle House that much, though. I know Atlanta. I know that's like, you know, I know Atlanta loves its Waffle House.
Right.
But I guess the strip club food is so good that that's where I'll be eating.
Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but when I was a young man,
yeah,
strip clubs in Atlanta were legendary. Legendary.
Still.
Not anymore.
Not the same way?
No, dude. If you went to the Gold Club, I'm going to tell you a true story. All right, we're going to get real.
Yeah.
In 92, 94, the Gold Club was so amazing. And I remember one night in particular. It was like 10 o'clock, and it was like the shift change.
Right.
And they literally lined up 50 women, like 50. And I'm telling you, like schoolgirl, Asian, big girl. It was like there is something for every single man's fantasy, and they were all like 9 to 10s. And like as a 25-year-old, I was like, I've died and gone to heaven.
There is one club like that, Follies. You know Follies?
Which one is that?
Follies is
again.
A
I haven't been in many
out.
Years.
So because what you're saying is not definitely not the norm in like the diversity, right? But there is one spot, Follies, DJ John Follies. I actually saw him at ATL Top 20's DJ dinner that he did with all of the big sort of strip club DJs just
right.
2 days
but
ago.
But strip clubs weren't a thing that way back then. Like I don't.
Yeah,
know,
I understand what
like
you're
music,
saying.
Like a little music,
I understand what you're
a little
saying.
Music history, like Girls, Girls, Girls by Motley Crue.
Okay.
That got popular because it started getting played in strip clubs in Florida.
Okay.
So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You get that vibe.
Yep.
That's strip club music.
Got it.
Right.
Got it.
And maybe when. What was like the first like kind of like darker guy like Marilyn Manson and like some
sure.
of those kind of things, but a lot of hair metal and a lot of like, you know, kind of dirty like Marilyn Manson. I'm trying to think of the other guy's name.
I've seen that sort of thing in L.A. I've seen that sort of club in L.A. where it's more of that
but
dark goth rock type
right.
thing.
So that but back in the day.
Sure. That's what it was.
Right. And so they closed down the Gold Club. They closed down on 40. How about 41? There were like 7 strip clubs.
Mm.
All that's gone.
Mm.
All that's gone.
Well, the legacy lives on with these. I can tell you that the Atlanta strip clubs, especially the legacy, but even the reality still is that is the real life place. You mentioned that now, 2019, even and for a couple years now, a rapper can go on the internet and just grind and grind and get there. Atlanta is the one place that I know of, and it's starting with the strip clubs, where artists can go and grind and grind and grind. And now you need to have something else in order for it to work, like talent plus either money or a good personality, because people need to like you or whatever it is, but you can make it through the infrastructure that's there.
Right.
So that's what I'll have to give Atlanta Strip Club. And there's no other place like that, not even close.
All right, finish the sentence for me. I take Marta blank.
Not yet, but to the airport seems like a good idea.
To the airport is the most common answer, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, but for me, it would be blank because I haven't done it yet. But.
Favorite place to eat in Atlanta?
Oh, Mama's Mexican food, right across the street from Platinum, or used to be called a Shooter's Alley Strip Club. Yeah,
I'm sensing a theme here. Rank these in importance to you: Braves, Hawks, Falcons, United.
Braves number one. Shout out Alex Anthopoulos. He was Toronto's GM, so I'm a Blue Jays fan. And the Braves.
Blue Jays fan. Do you guys even still have a team?
Toronto. Yeah, there's a team. We made the playoffs a couple of years ago, but our last championship was actually when we beat. The last two championships in the history of Canada. Canada hasn't won a professional sports championship, not including soccer, which is the least important to me, since 92-93. 92 was Jays beat Braves and 93 the Phillies. But Braves is the Atlanta team that I root for. It's National League. Jose Bautista came here last year. So Braves definitely won. And then Hawks. I do feel bad for the Hawks because it's like, damn, it's just one. Like, as a Toronto, as someone from Toronto, I know what it's like to have shitty teams that never win. I know what it's like. And Toronto and Atlanta people were smart because they kind of gave up. And I feel like Atlanta people aren't that invested in the sports team. At least it doesn't hurt them. Toronto people still hope every year. But let's see. So Hawks or Falcons? Because I do like the Falcons to win because it makes Atlanta happy. And I'm a Saints guy, but I don't have that Saints-Hawks the Saints. Falcons rivalry, because I think you need to grow up in the city to have that, and like I became a Saints fan for, you know.
What about the Argonauts?
The Argonauts? I care about the Falcons.
She just
more
started
than the
dying
Argonauts.
Laughing. She started just dying
My
laughing.
My man knows CFL. My man knows what's up. My man is cultured.
Listen, when I was a young man, when ESPN first came on in 1984-83,
yeah,
there was a lot of CFL.
Wow.
Because there wasn't that much content yet.
Oh,
a lot of rugby, a lot of CFL.
Rugby, wow. I do wonder why they don't have more laterals in football, but I do think, like, at the end of the game.
I think you should get on SiriusXM and some of these in Fox and be like, yo, hot take, where's all the laterals?
Miami Miracle, that's what it was, right?
All right, let's tell people where they can find you.
So everywhere you want to find me, it's your boy Shah, S-H-A-H.
Day of Shah.
That's where you find
Just
me.
Just text me.
That's the song right now. Right now, we put out another song for basically the existing fan base called Fuck 'Em Up. As you can tell by the title, this wasn't meant for, you know, mainstream success. Somehow radio stations have started picking this up, so you can look for Fuck 'Em Up too. I think the radio edit is called Run 'Em Up. But there's new music dropping. The song will be called Poison. It's a proper release, so enjoy Just Text while it's out there, and then we'll keep it moving.
She wants to tell you one more thing before we go.
Oh, and okay, so, and some of the biggest performances of this year, I guess, are already happening this weekend. So we have a lot of events. So I'm doing the International Convention Center on Saturday, and then the world premiere of Poison will be at Magic City right after that, also on Saturday. And then I'm doing a little fan meet and greet at the ESPN party on Sunday morning. All my fans hit me up, and then we'll take care of that.
I was going to say, I can't take my son to the strip club to,
no.
You know.
Oh, sorry. My bad. The Maxim party on Sunday morning is where we're doing the meet and greet, the fan meet and greet. I'm doing another pressure there. But all my people, if you're listening, you want to see me live, then, well, I don't know when date this will air, but, you know. You can come find me. I'm here in Atlanta. I love you. Thank you for doing this for me. Atlanta, I every day I say God bless Atlanta because y'all the city that got me started. And yeah, I'm here.
All right. Thanks, dude. There you go. That was Shah. Catch him at a strip club near you, and also not at strip clubs.